time now for Outsiders. I'm Barry Cassidy and you're not.
And joining you this morning, a political science academic associate professor Sarah Madison from University of Melbourne, Stephen Brook, features editor of The Australian, and Fatima Mesham, columnist, consulting editor at Eureka Street.
Good
Welcome
morning.
All. Hello.
Good morning.
And how's the weather, Stephen? You join us from Sydney.
Deluge. My car park is flooded. I had to hop into a taxi to get here. So
it's only going to get worse, apparently.
Well, just outside the ABC headquarters, there's this huge plume of water went up when we went too close to the gutter. So this is Sydney all over. And more to come today.
Yes, indeed. Oh, well, I have in my social media feeds, as a precautionary measure, muted both Sydney and weather. So
that should
keep me
out
of the
worst. Very technically advanced of you.
Thank you so much. Look, the news, and unexpected, over the weekend, of course, the death of Muhammad Ali. And a really interesting occasion, because in terms of how he will be remembered, one of the most famous points of his life was changing his name from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali, then refusing to fight in Vietnam, a thing that had him stripped of his titles and pretty much ostracized from American sport. And he spoke very passionately about race. Here's an example.
If I'm going to die, I'll die now, right here fighting you. If I'm going to die, you my enemy. My enemy is the white people, not Viet Cong or Chinese or Japanese. You my opposer when I want freedom. You my opposer when I want justice. You my opposer when I want equality. You won't even stand up for me in America for my religious beliefs, and you want me to go somewhere and fight.
And already Fatima was saying in the eulogizing today how Muhammad Ali resolve racial conflict.
No, it's really annoying, because the only people who are saying that he transcended race are white people. The only people who are saying we shouldn't politicize Muhammad Ali are white people. And it's a really disrespectful, inaccurate representation of his legacy. He was a highly political athlete, and he was audacious and unapologetic. And so, you know, we should preserve that to honor him. That's how we honor him, honor the completeness of his person, rather than cherry picking the things that are convenient to us to soothe us. I think this is the thing that happens when really incendiary icons pass away. This is effort to somehow sublimate, you know, the sharper, or to soften their sharper edges. Because we don't want to be reminded that we were ever confronted, you know, by them.
Well, and the thing too, Sarah, is that of course, if we are the person who's died, have now lost control of our legacy. It becomes what other people make it.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, this dynamic that we're seeing playing out over one hugely significant person's death is so symptomatic of race politics all over the world. There is a huge white desire to sublimate difference, to say, no, really, we're all the same. It's just about opportunity or access to services or development or whatever it is. And people of colour around the world are saying, you know, actually, it's about difference and we don't want to be the same as you.
And here's a golden moment, Stephen Brook, for your delectation of Muhammad Ali in this country.
I like the boy.
Did you say Roy or boy?
I like the boy. Is something wrong with saying that?
Roy.
Yeah. Hey, hang on. No. I'll change religion. I'll do anything for you. I don't care. What's wrong with saying that? I like the boy.
Yeah,
I like
the man. I like
Stephen
Brook.
I actually
Bert
know where
not
that was
it
at the Logies.
Yes, well done.
Whereas Bert, I think in ignorance, we've got to be fair to him, didn't realise that his introduction, or his sort of what he perceived as a compliment, was in fact one of the biggest racist insults it was possible to deliver to a black man on stage. At, you know, Logies were huge back then. And you could hear people in the audience, some of them whom were American actors, shouting out, Roy, don't, you know, one of the most powerfully built black athletes in the world, being insulted to his face in front of an auditorium full of people, but also hundreds of thousands of TV viewers. So he seemed to cope with that very well. Wow. And it could have been a very ugly incident.
Yeah, poor Bert. Let's talk politics because...
Oh, must
should we?
Well, I have good news. I have good news for you all. This week we reached halfway.
Oh, that's not that good. That's not that good.
Well, no, because that means that there's half
50%
still to
better
come.
Than it was a few weeks ago.
Well, and what
that halfway means is that people actually, a large proportion of people out there who aren't interested in politics are probably going to pay attention for the first time to this campaign.
Well, that's entirely possible. Look, polling out to mark the midpoint from Fairfax Ipsos poll. And here's an interesting part of that polling. Malcolm Turnbull's net popularity, you know, the difference between people who like him and people who don't, it came down, it peaked at 53% just after his ascension to the throne of grace. It's now sitting, anybody like to take a guess? 3%.
Ooh. No.
Is Malcolm Turnbull's net popularity. Yes, that's a bit of a...
Well, I mean, Malcolm's problem has been from day one. He painted himself into a corner to become Prime Minister. He had to agree to not act on all the things that marked him out as different from Abbott, which is why the Australian population was so enthusiastic about the change of leadership. And I think that's really marking this whole campaign, that the coalition government is jumping up and down on the spot, trying to not be Abbott, but also trying to not be Shorten. And as a result, it's kind of saying not very much of anything.
And that new normal you mentioned there, Stephen Brook, is that we'll do anything to get into the gig and then worry about the detail later?
Well, actually, that is interesting. But what I did mean is our innate dislike of politicians. So to have a politician such as Malcolm Turnbull, who was genuinely popular for a considerable period, is actually quite unusual. And I think that... often they tend to be people who aren't in power, and to get a popular politician who is actually in power, who has to do things, but also more pointedly not do things and say no to a lot of people, generally becomes pretty disliked pretty quickly.
Although, Fatima, there's a bit more to that too. It's almost like with Turnbull, a sense of sublimation of true self.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. And I've heard it bandied about that, once he gets a proper mandate, then he will be able to act on all these things that people had expected him to do. And we're highly sceptical of that. And I think people are right to be sceptical. I mean, I think we went through this with Rudd. Rudd came in with such high expectations.
Yep.
And I think there's a correlation between the way that his popularity plummeted and the fact that he didn't act on some of the critical issues that people wanted action
when
on.
He wimped it on the climate.
Exactly.
That was a destruction of his sort of reputation.
So it's about credibility, isn't it? And Malcolm Turnbull is fast losing credibility. So that'll be interesting how that plays out, because Shorten's stock has risen as well.
Well, it's making it a very tight contest. The two-party preferred polling in that Ipsos poll of the weekend, 51-49. So ALP slightly ahead now on the two-party preferred vote. But as you point out, Stephen, potentially the bulk of people yet to fully engage, which I suspect, Sarah, is what's about to take place. We're about to see a bit of a quantum shift in the quality of this campaign.
Well, we may do. I mean, I feel like we're caught in a bit of a almost Truman Show-esque loop in contemporary politics at the moment. I mean, we've seen it kind of play out in the pop culture West Wing scenario where, you know, it was about let Bartlett be Bartlett, and this we've had the real Julia, and now are we waiting to let Malcolm be Malcolm? Like, there's this, but we seem caught in this loop between tightly controlled politics and campaigning. And this sense that there's really something more to our politicians than we can actually see.
Which is not to say that haven't had, you know, significant and truly profound moments of national discourse.
How old is your rat?
He's 2.5.
Okay.
Yeah. He's the reason I don't get pests in my home. He eats them all.
Well, there you go.
Silverfish, ant spiders, fleas.
Excellent.
Flea eggs.
That's fantastic.
Only bad thing he does is he tries to clean my teeth while I'm asleep.
Bill Shorten was given a rat to mind, and he must have smelled a rat when the woman who gave it to him disappeared.
Looking at the cuddle, Bill?
I think he's doing very well in Tanya's hands.
Never mind, Stephen Brook, your superannuation, your company tax regimes. It's rats.
I think there must be a manual that these politicians are given on their first day, which is if you're doing a walkabout and there are cameras and you are handed a rat or any other crazy, or you're handed an onion, what are you going to do? How do you avoid making
Don't eat the rat, Malcolm.
All
Don't
of
eat
yourself.
The rat.
line in inane answers to inane questions that you might get asked. But
yes,
could have been a very embarrassing moment for both of them, and they managed to avoid that. So I think they'll regard that as a win. That's a win for them.
We see. This is we are. Fatima, this is where politics is at now. Can you handle the rat?
Oh, I suppose those were the most genuine moments we've seen so far. The spontaneous, moments. Otherwise, it's all very highly controlled. Sarah was saying.
Look, there have been tough issues. I mean, Sarah, the superannuation has been very difficult for the coalition. And Labor too, I think, a bit wrong-footed on company tax grabs this week of Shorten supporting it back in the day, and politicians are nothing if not flexible. So we're dealing with real things too.
We are. I mean, I think what's interesting about both of those issues is, this election we've known was coming for a long time. Like Turnbull had this play in motion for some time. We knew exactly the day the election was going to be called. Both parties have got mapped out scheduled campaigns from day one. And yet we saw in week one, they were both blown off course, and they've continued to struggle, I think, to find their footing and to find some way of cutting through on those serious issues that they are trying to talk about, which is, I guess in one sense, the beauty of politics. But, it would be excellent, I think, for most Australians to feel that there was some deeper engagement on issues that matter.
Here's Bill Shorten's ringing endorsement of lower company tax.
2013. Cutting the company income tax rate increases domestic productivity and domestic investment. More capital means higher productivity and economic growth and leads to more jobs and higher wages.
Of course, the counter to that, Stephen Brook, was that the company tax rate change that the Labor Party was put forward was knocked back by the coalition. So nobody really wins from that.
Yeah, there have been on both sides this shifting of position on various issues, which does them no credit, I think, because Bill Shorten is wrong on company tax. He can't say that a couple of years ago in his budget reply speech and then argue that it's just a big sort of tax holiday for big businesses. So I think he's vulnerable there. Turnbull also vulnerable on superannuation, but in a way he's vulnerable with his very conservative, wealthy Liberal Party base. And I think when fairness has been put into play as being such a crucial object of desire, certainly on the Labor side, and as almost like an economic goal, Turnbull can, in a way, turn that around and say, well, look, I am hitting people who've had a bit of a tax holiday at the upper end of the superannuation scale in a bid to make them pay a bit more of their share. It's one of the few, if not the only, times he's really marched up to the conservative base and had a go at them.
Can I add, though, that was partly because the policy craft that Labor has undertaken over the past several months has ended up pushing Turnbull on these issues, which they would rather not deal with because it's going to put them at risk with their own base. The other thing I need to point out, too, is that during the Gillard government, the Gillard government was criticised for its neoliberal approach to certain things. And I think Shorten now appealing to its traditional base through redistribution is, basically pretty politically savvy. And people are actually catching on to that.
And I think it's overstating the risk to that conservative base. We saw Turnbull welcomed with open arms into Cory Bernardi's Conservative Leadership Institute this week.
That was a really interesting moment this week because that's, here are two people whose ideological interests you would think would be utterly inimical, and there he was.
But their political interests.
very close.
Very, very closely aligned, and they will be bedfellows, and I choose that word with great care, until
Corey
the 2nd
will be
of
on
July.
The phone. Yeah.
Well, it's a broad church. Liberal Party's a broad church. Labor Party has Labor and also the Greens, which you could argue is a very extremist left wing of the Labor Party, but it's not anymore because
you wouldn't have said they're on. You wouldn't say they're on the same.
You could
queue.
Argue that, but you'd be pretty
wrong.
No,
but they are in conflict. Whereas Turnbull is trying to keep the conservative wing of the party within the tent, so he hasn't done what David Cameron has done in Britain on a whole range of issues like the environment and on gay marriage and on leaving the European Union, and really gone to war against the conservative backbenchers. Turnbull is being much more softly, and I think that for people who aren't Liberal Party supporters, That's where his popularity has gone into free fall, because the swinging voters and left-wing inclined voters who really liked the old Turnbull are very disappointed with Malcolm Turnbull, Prime Minister.
Who may or may not have given him their vote in any event. A quick final point, and we mentioned environment and climate there, and while all this, you know, the nonsense of the campaign takes place, somewhere just to the east of Cairns, a national institution is in grave peril. Yes, Labor Party mentioned it last week and put some money around it, and yet it seems extraordinary that the thing that was always going to be the most physical manifestation of climate change is happening before our eyes and all but ignored.
It's awful, isn't it? Jeff Sparrow actually wrote about this in Eureka Street recently, about how come when the Franklin, during the Franklin Dam campaign, it really sort of... the general public really latch onto that and take that on as one of the most critical issues. So we don't seem to have that same fervour around the Great Barrier Reef, and it's puzzling. I'm not sure whether that's because we've got that, you know, insularity around, that bubble around, you know, if it doesn't directly affect me, then it's not that important. So we've had this campaign that's tinkering around their edges. It's quite domestically insular. Whereas there's all these global realities that are probably going to...
niggling away at the edges.
Yeah, we can't continue hiding.
Well, look, I'm sure, as we say, there's 5 weeks to go. Anything could happen and probably will, thanks to our outsiders this morning. Associate Professor Sarah Madison, Stephen Brook and Fatima Meesham.